This recording was made at the second Asia-Pacific OutGames Human Rights Conference, held in Wellington, New Zealand in March 2011.
My current role is I'm Executive Director of the National LGBTI Health Alliance. That's a fairly new peak body in Australia that is basically an umbrella organisation for individuals and organisations who work in a whole lot of different ways to improve, promote the health and well-being of lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, intersex, and a whole lot of other sexuality, sex and gender diverse people. So in that role, it's about working with very diverse individuals, diverse organisations in a very complex environment. And part of the challenge of that is, of course, that the interests, needs, experiences of different parts of our multifaceted communities are often not acknowledged in the, certainly in the organised work that happens around LGBTI rights, even if in Australia at the moment we're using the acronym LGBTI. But a lot of the work, the advocacy that is done in that area has tended to come from the context of people best resourced. So often issues of difference and of the different needs and of the different resources available to people to both advocate for their needs but also to claim them are very a lot. And I guess what I was talking about in my presentation was I was starting off with the word intersectionality because it's become very fashionable. And I think it's starting to be used a lot as a term to address the interrelations between different forms of difference. I think we've become relatively familiar with this idea that people have multiple identities, but we often don't think very much further than that about, well, what does that mean? And there's often still this additive approach of, well, you're either gay or you're a migrant or whatever, and if you're thinking in multiple terms, then maybe you can be a couple of things at once. Maybe you can be a gay migrant or a lesbian Indigenous person or something like that, but it's still hard for us to conceptualize, well, what does that mean? And to think beyond it being like an addition of, oh, you've got one strand of identity and then you've got another and you add that and, hey, if you've got a couple of strands that are marginalised identities, hey, you must be extra unhappy because you've got added layers of potential, at least, discrimination. And that it's actually a lot more complex than that. And the term intersectionality is a trying, I guess, to understand what those connections mean and how that plays out. The point I was trying to get across was that particularly because it's become a bit fashionable, it's often being used in a quite unreflected way. So what's often being left out of the equation is the power imbalances between different social groups and the different, you know, I have a sociologist background, so the social capital associated with different identities. And that's quite concrete, you know, what sort of resources? If I'm middle class, I have access to education that has a lot of implications of what other types of things I can access. I have access to dominant social norms of walk out, you know, simple stuff like etiquette. You know, what responses do people have to me on the basis of etiquette? So it's a whole range of things from access to money through to more diffuse resources or power access. And that each individual is positioned somewhere in the intersection between an interplay of a whole lot of different social categories, and each of those categories is not a sort of an either or, and it's not associated with, oh, you have power or you don't. It's actually far more complex than that, and they're all continuums and they're all axes of power. So what I think is useful in talking about intersectionality is to think of it as a matrix or a whole lot of overlapping groups with associated sort of resources attached to them, power attached to them, and the individual is positioned at where they interplay. So it's not as simple as adding things up. You know, hey, as a lesbian, I've got less power here, but more power because I'm white and that. It's actually about, well, how does my skin color mediate my experience of being a lesbian? A lot of people are talking at this conference around takatāpui identity and being very clear that that's not as simple as, oh, here's the Māori part of me and here's the gay, lesbian or trans part of me. It's actually a very specific interplay that has a really specific implications for how I understand myself, what my identity means to me, the resources available to me, and how I live my life. So it's intersectionality is about trying to conceptualize that and think through the implications. And ultimately for me it comes down to people are complicated. People have access to power in relation to various parts of their experiences in society, and there are parts of their identity where they're more likely to have less resources, but it's actually more an interplay of how those different axes work together that gives you access to certain types of resources and certain needs and gaps in others. So to advocate for equity on a sort of a societal level or on an individual level in terms of social service provision or whatever, or even our own individual rights, we actually need to be taking that complexity into account, because otherwise we're kind of missing the point. We're certainly not going to create sustained social change. And often what we're doing, a lot of LGBTI advocacy has often come from a position of, oh, we are disempowered due to being gay or being lesbian or being trans. And I note that you can be both trans and gay or lesbian. They are lumped together often as though they're sort of separate, but they interconnect too. And by doing so, ignore all those other threads, all those other axes, where within that pool of LGBTI people, some of us have more power than others. There's a whole complexity of experiences, resources, etc. And if we want to move forward around sexual orientation issues or gender identity or sex identity issues in an authentic way that benefits everybody, we actually need to take that complexity into account, because otherwise we're reproducing some of the norms of dominance and the assumptions. And generally, I mean, very simplistically, what that means is, you know, white, middle-class, urban perspectives are being reproduced, and intentionally or not, excluding a vast number of other people who really, theoretically at least, fit under that umbrella. So to move forward as a movement, we need to take that complexity into account. To be able to provide good services, we need to take those into account. To be able to advocate for change, to empower ourselves. And that means both working on an empowerment framework, but also on a power-sharing framework, acknowledging where we do have power and using it very constructively for social change.
I think it was a very good point you made in another session where you were talking about it's very easy to say LGBTI in a title, but to actually have that consultation and collaboration is very hard.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's hard both conceptually, because we're used to sort of this binary model of, oh, you're this or you're that, and life's simple and all black and white, and that's part of Western ways of thinking. But it's also hard because, hey, we've all got experiences with each other, and the experiences of those population groups that have tended to be more marginalised, in particular trans and intersex people, but I'd also say bi people, because I haven't heard anyone talking at this conference so far about bi issues, tend to be marginalised. So where there's been experiences, it's often meant that it's been a token sort of an acronym of inclusion, but people have not had their issues being addressed. They've often come on board in solidarity for issues that are not primarily theirs. HIV is a great example. But when it's about issues that are primarily around gender identity, for example, like identity documentation, then it's sort of a, oh, but that's not really an issue for us. And it's sort of, oh, well, maybe one day when we have time, well, that's your issue. So I guess, you know, the point I was trying to make is if we are going to use those types of collective acronyms or work collectively, then it is about taking very seriously issues of collaboration and consultation and not just pretending we're this nice harmonious whole and we're all equal and we all love each other, because actually we oppress each other too, because we have a whole very complex of identities and belongings.
That was a very interesting slide you put up, which was just simply a very large M, or what looked like an M. Can you just describe that?
Well, it's hard to describe because it's such a visual thing. What I did was I put up an M, what looked initially at least like an M on the screen, and asked people what they see, and people see an M. And then I showed with an arrow what perspective that was being seen from, and then I used other arrows to look at that same figure from other perspectives. And this is two-dimensional, so it's a bit simplistic. It would be more fun to do it 3D. And ask people what they see. And it actually takes quite a shift of trying to work out what would you see if you sort of moved around there. And, of course, what people were seeing was something quite different. If you looked from the top, so to say, you'd be seeing a W. And the key message is that where people are positioned determines what their experience of reality is, what they're seeing, what they're perceiving, what their experiences are, what resources are available to them. And we're also used to seeing the world from our position, that it's often quite hard to grasp that there are most people, in fact, are standing in a different place to us, because the threads that make up their identities, their lives and their experiences position them differently to me, and thus their perception of the world will be different. And I need to grasp that basic fact if I'm actually going to engage with them effectively. And that applies to everybody.
And I very much like that point that you said where, yes, to acknowledge that there are other points of view, but you don't necessarily need to understand those points of view.
Yeah, or even to agree with them. Part of that complexity is that people have very different interests, needs and positions, and I don't have to agree with somebody on every point in order to be able to work with them in coalition around our common interests, or out of solidarity around issues that are not primarily mine. I think often in some of the sort of training or learning and development approaches working around to combat homophobia and transphobia, I think we often don't move past the empathy phase. And empathy is well and good and it's a real skill, but we can't always feel empathy, and we certainly can't understand the reality of people necessarily, and that shouldn't be the prerequisite to working effectively with them. So what I do need to understand is that there are limits of what I can understand is really the key skill, I guess.
So this conference, what is the biggest thing that you hope to take away from this conference?
I guess a mixture of three things. Affirmation in what I'm doing, and sort of building on that, growing from that through constructive, good conversations. Being challenged, being learning new ideas, thoughts, and having my own thinking questioned and that. And thirdly, networking. I mean, it's just, this conference can't help but be wonderful because there's hundreds of people doing really exciting things that are all in one space, and even if I only get to talk to half a dozen of them, I will have benefited from that.
So flashing forward to like 30 years' time when somebody's listening back to this, is there something that you would say to them?
That's a really mean question. First of all, nobody will be interested enough probably to listen back to this, but hopefully there'll be someone that, looking back on us and thinking, oh, the poor things, life was so much more difficult then, and we've moved so much further, and now it's not a new or exciting thought to be challenging sort of binary, simplistic conceptions of identity. Of course we see that complexity, and of course we're addressing power imbalances, but really nowadays it's all far more constructive, and you're stating the obvious. I'd like it if they think I'm stating the obvious.
Do you ever think that we could actually go backwards rather than kind of, you know, being a lot more open?
Far too often. I used to work in a role, and I guess this can go on record. I used to work for the New Zealand government in a role called GLBTI policy, and that was something that was introduced by the Labour Party as their platform, and I don't even remember when, so I wasn't the first person in that role. And so there was actually a government position that had the aim of people working across government with expertise in these areas to assist other officials to work inclusively and take this population group into account in what they were doing, because there was an acknowledgement that that wasn't happening satisfactorily. We were really confident that that was a secure, stable role, and I left that role at the very start of 2009, and soon after, that was just after a change of government, there was a national government came into power, and soon after that role was basically disbanded with no trara or anything. It just ceased to actually work. So that's in a way just a really small thing, but it was one that shocked me because it wasn't part of a huge massive backswing, but it was a real indication that this is still seen as very marginal and very dispensable. So I think in many, many small ways like that, we're a lot more vulnerable than we think we are, and that what's seen as positive social change can very easily slip backwards. So I hope not too far, and that generally we're making three steps forward and only one backwards, but I think we are making lots of backward steps. And of course, people's vision of where forwards and backwards is varies, but in terms of sort of real basics like more equity, more potential for participation, more acknowledgement of diversity, and challenging some of the power imbalances and inequities, I think that that's much more vulnerable than here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we often like to think.